keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams.
Oh, wait. It's not Tuesday or Thursday. Wednesday night, SM gets it in the house in San Diego, California, right now with Nick Burnaby.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show.
Anti-Media Radio, as always. How's everybody doing out there tonight? We're going to have a special roundtable edition of the show. So, Nick, tell us what's going on.
Well, we got all kinds of news tonight that we're going to go over. I mean, you name it, it's all happening. The TPP got held up in the Senate. They're saying that they could vote on it again tomorrow, and a bunch of people are changing their mind. We got to be on top of that. 117 countries have come out against U.S. police brutality. That's a huge story by one of our new journalists on the anti-media.
Great, great, great article.
There's 2016 chatter going on. We've been covering some recent stuff. Fine, we all know about the Chris
Christie.
We've
been sitting in here arguing about it all night tonight.
We all know Chris Christie may be a possible contender, and it was found out that he spent almost $100,000 on food at football games.
He actually spent $300,000 on food. With
$82,000 was just hot dogs.
It was $82,000 over two seasons at Jets and Giants games.
He didn't even use buns for the hot dogs either.
And think about it. Here's my thought. What if he wasn't on a diet? Like, how much would he have spent then? Like, this is when he was on a diet.
This is Gallows.
The taxpayer is literally killing him.
Most common denominator.
We're also joined in the studio. We got a packed house tonight. Jake Anderson, obviously, SM Gibson. How you doing, Jake?
Very, very well, my friend. Very well.
Jake, you got a relatively new article up on the site as well. We're going to talk about that a little bit, too.
Super duper.
And we're also joined by our co-host, DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Nick. Got a lot of things accomplished today. I was pretty proud of myself.
Woo!
That's good, man. We're missing you here in the studio.
Well, I'll be back one of these days, but I got to do my thing.
So DB's up and left us in San Diego for Minnesota. SM Gibson's visiting us from Birmingham, Alabama. Jake is from here in San Diego as well, so... we got all kinds of stuff to go over tonight. Let's jump into this police brutality topic, because to me this is pretty big. And I mean, basically what happened is there's a what's called the UN Human Rights Council, and all these countries, 117 of them, that are all members of the UN, basically grilled the United States the other day on you know, our police, you know, the way our police treat our citizens and the amount of people are killed by police and the amount of racism that's going on in the policing and all these horrible things. And they, a lot of them also talked about our incarceration state, and they also touched on our use of the death penalty and things like that, because in many countries, you know, these are things that are considered barbaric.
Well, I tell you what, I usually start my show on Tuesday and Thursday with this stat, and I'm going to go ahead and spoiler alert. We have had 422 Americans killed by police officers. 422 people have been killed since the beginning of the year.
In 2015 alone?
2015 alone, and we have 44 officers that have died in the line of duty, and that's including 12 by automobile accident, 2 by accidental gunfire, 11 by heart attack. So
half of them are natural.
Right, exactly. And that's what we're dealing with. And we're talking 422 people, their lives have been taken. We just had Mother's Day pass. 422 mothers had to mourn whether they, you know, maybe their mothers had passed away. They had to mourn their child.
And this is unprecedented. There's no other country on the earth with this level of police brutality, is there? I mean,
no.
Not in the developed world. My friend was over here last night. I'm not sure if he's listening to the show tonight. If he is, hopefully he calls in. We were talking about this, and you know, we got into an argument about, you know, are the American police the worst in the world? And
what
you know,
about the Saudis.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Yeah. It can be argued that we're not, but in the Western world, in the developed world. The U.S. is the worst police force.
What about Israel?
I mean,
I believe the United States per capita is worse than Israel.
When it comes to the police, yeah, most of Israel's killing are done by the IDF.
And it's outside of their borders.
Just outside and mostly just killing Palestinians.
Right, exactly.
But they do imprison a lot of political dissidents in Israel, Palestinian political dissidents, whether they're journalists or activists or you know, even young kids, man. There was a story not too long ago about how many teenagers the Israelis lock up, and it's a lot, you know.
So they might beat us by a shade on overall war crimes, maybe, but...
but they're also not in the West, you know. We're talking about right. West, and I think, you know, the U.S. is by far the worst in the West. You know, the U.K. has a big problem with police, but they just don't kill as many people.
You have to understand that U.K., they haven't killed as many people since 1900 as we have killed
last year.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a stark
comparison.
Last
year, this year, we're at 422.
Even in 1 month. In 1 month, we killed more people than the cops in the UK killed since 1900.
And DB made a great point, you know, because everybody's about ISIS. They're killing people. They're scaring people. Another stat I start the show off with: 83 people have been beheaded in Saudi Arabia this year so far. Last year it was 87. We're at 83, and it's May. So we're about to pass what they did 5 months.
We're going to get in the Guinness Book of World Records here.
So. Yeah.
And everybody out there listening, make sure that you don't solely rely on our Facebook page to receive our content, because Facebook broke today. Just in case anybody was wondering why we haven't posted any new articles, even though we've published about five new articles today. The reason why we're not posting new articles is because the Facebook's website scraping protocol, whatever you want to call it, is broken. You know, it's not working.
Well, we're still posting articles. We're still there. We're still delivering the news to people.
They're throttling page reads.
Right. No, it's a widespread outage. I mean, I've even checked Washington Post links into the debugging tool, and nothing's working. So Facebook, at the beginning of the month, went through a big they changed their entire API, and I don't know exactly what API is, but it's basically what sites use to read content. And so basically Facebook upgraded its API to its 2.0 version, and ever since then there's been bugs. You know, there were a few weeks ago we had a bug, last week we had a bug, now today it broke again. So we can't, the only articles we can post are articles that we have memes for. And, you know, it's not as easy as people think to come up with a meme that is actually worth posting.
You know? It's easy.
We have a few memes that we have right now that we're still trying to figure out if we want to post them or not.
Oh, yeah, we do.
But... Do it!
They're a bit scandalous.
People can't handle the truth. That's all we're debating here. We're not going to get into the specifics.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, I mean.
So we have another story here that kind of involves this police state.
The 422 against the 44. Last year alone, we had 1,100 people that were killed. 1,100 people were killed by police officers versus 51. That came out from the FBI statistics. That's not the anti-media. That's not InfoWars. That's not conspiracy theory. The FBI, 51 versus 1,100.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, what we're talking about here is roughly, what is that, like 2,000%?
Yeah.
So basically you have it's 2,000% more likely that a person is going to be killed by a cop than a cop is going to get killed by a regular person. You know, and we all saw everyone's like, oh, you know, are you going to get bit by a shark? But the chances are higher that you get struck by lightning before getting bit by a shark. So this is one of these, it's one of these cultural myths that it's like, oh, cops are, you know, are the people that are going to be, you know, killed and persecuted and are the ones that are facing the toughest situation. But that isn't exactly true.
But I want to tell you, Nick, that's the reason I used to give the stats of people that have been killed by officers at the beginning of my show. And you know what? Being in the South in Birmingham, Alabama, you have a lot of people. And fair enough to their point. They say, well, how many police officers have been killed? And that's why I start the show off with that stat. Because I think that's fair enough. You know, I think people need to hear both sides of that story. You know, if you want to know how many people have been killed by the police, then let's give them how many police officers have been killed. And let's compare the two. It's ludicrous. Last year, 51 against 1,100. Is that right? You know, you got your stat. That's the FBI stat. Now how does that sit? Because you keep saying, well, how many officers got killed? How many officers got killed to that number? Well, you got it. So how do you feel now?
Well, we looked up the stats today, and we found out that there are a lot of other professions that are a lot more dangerous than being a cop. You know,
professional athlete, fishermen,
truckers, miners, electrical workers, roofing, construction, pilots, loggers, farmers, trash collectors. These are all jobs that are much more dangerous.
Septic tank welder.
is search engine optimization on there?
No, but it should be. And you know, the sad thing, man, and this is what's really stark, is that being a journalist in Mexico is more dangerous than being a cop in the U.S.
Doing anything in Mexico for my little time there is more dangerous than being a cop.
It can be. And so, you know, what this is the thing. This is a big myth that people have, you know, and it's kind of a barrier to getting people to understand, like, hey, well, why are all these people getting killed by cops? Well, it's because they're scaring the cops. Well, here's the fact of the matter. The cops aren't even in that much of danger. I mean, these guys, you know, join, you know, voluntarily go into that career knowing that they are in some way or another going to be putting themselves in a relative amount of danger.
Percentage-wise, there have been as many cops die this year alone from a heart attack as they have from violent encounters. Heart attack.
Exactly. So we're not talking about a job where these guys are literally having to fear for their lives every day, as much as you wouldn't think that a trash collector is, you know, out there fearing for his life every day. But, you know, every now and then things happen and lightning strikes. But the fact of the matter is that you're a lot more likely to get killed by a cop than you are likely to kill one. You know, and that's just where the statistics lie, and that's from the FBI. Those are the stats. Now, one of the things that this article points out, and this is on the anti-media, so the whole point I was trying to make is, you know, if you don't see us posting articles, just go to the website because we're constantly updating. Everyone out there listening,
www.theantimedia.org.
I recommend checking the website at least twice or three times a day just to see, you know, what is going on. And we try to post you know, the stuff that you're not going to hear, the stuff maybe you're hearing about, maybe there's another story to it. But, you know, the whole thing about this article here by Carrie Wedler that we posted today is that the media has kind of been fixating more on the fact that there's these, you know, 51 cops that are dead, and less on the fact that there was over 1,000, you know, people dead. And I don't think you'll see that stat anywhere on any corporate media publication about there being over 1,000 citizens dead, because the official numbers that come from the FBI, and Carrie also wrote an article about this a few months ago towards the end of the year, is that the FBI purposely, you know, suppresses the amount of people actually being killed. So, you know, the numbers are actually a lot higher than...
Well, it says in the article right now is that only a minority percentage of police departments accounted for the people that they shot last year. So that number could technically be higher as far as the 1,100 goes.
Only 750 out of 17,000 local departments submitted data for 2013.
So, and you know, we sit here and we talk about...
In 2014, sorry.
And we talk about that the corporate media is not relaying this information to you. But the reason that the corporate media is choosing not to relay this information to you is because they are doing their job. Because their job is to spread fear. And they want you to be fearful to walk outside. They want you to be scared of your neighbor. Because if you're scared of your neighbor... you're willing to give up a little bit of your freedoms. And that's what we've dealt with the TSA and really everything. When you have fear, you're willing to let go of freedom until they've taken everything away from you.
The last decade and a half, that's been the protocol.
Right. I mean that's become the country that we live in, is especially where I'm from in the South, or even if you... they watch Fox News, but even if you watch MSNBC or CNN, it's still fear-based. Everything you see is fear-based. And the purpose of that fear is to cause a divide in you to say, I know we have these freedoms, but I love my family. I don't want to be injured. I don't want my family to be injured. So I'm willing to give up a piece of that freedom for this safety, the safety net.
Hunter S. Thompson's last book is called Kingdom of Fear, and he just nails it. He talks about this culture we're living in right now in the post 9/11 world has been reappropriated around the idea of fear, selling it, packaging it, instilling it, integrating it.
I think that we were in a minor league version of the fear culture before 9/11.
Yeah.
But when 9/11 happened, we went pro.
Yeah.
And we're talking Dick Cheney. He was the Michael Jordan of fear.
The king of fear.
Yeah. Right. They're coming.
He was a LeBron, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Jordan. I think he dunked from the free throw line or something. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're coming for you. ISIS is coming.
Yeah.
ISIS is here. They're on your doorstep.
Yeah.
They're over the border in Mexico.
They're going through your mail.
Yeah. ISIS is coming to get you. Be scared. Be terrified. They hate you. They hate you. They hate you.
And look. Meanwhile, the cops killed 1,000 people.
And look, if the cops need to come in and if they need to get in your house, what do you have to hide, huh? Do you have something to hide? Oh, well, then otherwise, no, let the cops in, right?
Meanwhile, if you film a politician doing something they ought not be doing, if you film a cop doing something they ought not be doing, that's illegal.
Right.
That you can't
do that. In some places.
Well,
in most of the U.S., technically, it's supposedly legal to film cops.
Well, that's an important distinction to make. Yeah. It is legal.
But do people still get beat up? Do people still get their cameras crushed? Do people still get arrested for filming the cops? Yeah. One of our journalists has actually been arrested for filming the cops. Several of our journalists, Patty PM Beers and Alyssa, have been arrested for doing just that. You know, even though it's technically legal, they throw you in jail, they take your equipment, and then they let you out the next day. No charges. But where'd your footage go? Where's your equipment? You know what I mean? And so this is what these guys do. And this is a story we're working on tomorrow. I just want to jump into this now because it's kind of related. This is going to be, I'm working on it right now, but it's going to be out tomorrow morning, about how the DEA basically jacked this kid. And I call him a kid. He's a 22-year-old guy, but they jacked him for $16,000. The DEA boarded an Amtrak train. He was moving from Michigan to LA, and he's a aspiring music producer, a music video producer. And the DEA literally goes on this train. They start asking the passengers on the train about what, you know, what their business is and what they're traveling for and all this stuff. They come up to this kid. His name is Joseph Rivers, 22-year-old. And they say, you know, oh, what's your business on this train? He said, well, I'm going to Los Angeles. I say, why? He says, I'm going to L.A. to make a music video, and I'm moving there. And they said, okay, well, what's in your bag? And he said, well, you know, I got some money in there. And the DEA said, can we search it? And he said, all right, yeah, go ahead. You know, if I got nothing to hide, you know, what is my why flex my rights if I got nothing to hide, right? Now, keep in mind, this is a young guy. He's saving up money. His family, you know, this is one of those stories where the family all pitches in. They want to have they want to send this guy out to, you know, accomplish what he's trying, you know, to live out the American dream or whatever you want to call it. And they sent him to LA with all this money that he had saved, that he had earned, that he had gotten from relatives. And they say, well, what are you doing with the $16,000? He said, well, I needed to, you know, pay, you know, start my new life in Los Angeles, you know, pay rent, pay a deposit on an apartment, rent some studio space, et cetera, et cetera. And they, okay, well, your money is ours now. And that's basically that's basically the end of the story.
You mean they stole his money?
Stole the money from him because they say that they don't have to prove that the person is guilty. They just have to presume that the money is guilty, that the money come from nefarious sources.
So what you're saying is they assumed that because it was a certain amount of money and it was in cash and not in a bank, that it was illegal money, and they took it off of him legally, quote unquote, legally. And this guy can't start his new life. But in America, isn't the American dream about building a dream? Like, isn't it about moving across the country and pursuing what you want to do in life?
Apparently, it's also about looting the country with banks.
Now, this isn't an isolated.
No.
This is not.
Banks provide jobs. How dare you?
Exactly. You tell them.
They invest in communities and help mom and pop's shops.
Now this isn't an isolated incident, okay? This falls under the what's called in a broad stroke civil asset forfeiture, right? Civil asset seizure.
What a pretty way of saying it.
And basically, in 2014, the government in total collected $3.9 billion in civil asset forfeiture. So yeah, this $16,000 from this kid is messed up. But the whole point of this is that it's happening on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, and I don't think I've talked about this yet on the show, I'm not going to mention any names or who it was, but on my flight back from Philadelphia, which I went to back in April, there was a guy on my plane that had also been a victim of the DEA at the airport where they confiscated $6,000 from him.
And
it's under the same exact circumstance where they say, hey,
you need to let people know you saw this with your own
eyes. I actually saw this. I talked to the guy. And basically the DEA.
But you witnessed them take it.
Yeah. No, I didn't witness him take it. The guy gets on the plane and then he's like steaming at the, you know, he's steaming, dude. And he's like, this is some effed up shit. He just took my money and all this shit. And I'm like, and then I start talking to him and he goes into detail explaining to me what happened. The DEA walks up to him and his buddy and they took cash from him. He took $6,000 from him. A lot more from his buddy at over 10. They took the money from him. And the whole reason they said is like, look, this money, we're presuming that you're going to be using this for something illegal. Even though he wasn't caught doing a crime, he was not detained at the airport, he wasn't charged with the crime, there was no warrant issued.
So you're basically saying is they came up to him, no crime was committed, they saw that he had a certain amount of cash, they took that cash away from him. And they sent him on his way.
Exactly.
So what's the difference between somebody that holds you up at gunpoint, like literally, forget the IRS and all, like they're extorting money from you, somebody that walks up to you, takes money from you and sends you on your way.
Well, first of all, these guys do have guns. Second of all, the IRS just bought how many hundreds or thousands of rounds of ammo?
But you're right.
$2 billion rounds.
Right, yeah. but that's all that goes through paperwork and stuff. We're talking about a guy literally walking up to a guy at an airport and saying, "Give me all your money," and walking away and sending you on your way.
Exactly, and it's part of this. It's part of the bigger problem that we face, which is this moral hypocrisy, right? It's this inconsistent moral standard where it's like, hey, if somebody did that to you that wasn't a DEA agent at the airport or a TSA agent or a cop or whatever, if somebody did that to you then that person is going, there's going to be a manhunt for that guy, and that guy's going to go to jail for a long time. Right. If somebody robbed you that had a gun for $16,000 on a train, you know what I mean? Or on a plane or whatever. But when the DEA does it for no good reason, and according to the story here that we have, this young man, Joseph Rivers, has no criminal record, was basically just moving to Los Angeles, and because he had cash, they just took it from him. But and that was it. It was just straight up theft.
But you know, it's ridiculous, and this has become this huge, like, I watch too much TV, I get too paranoid kind of a thing, but DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, has labeled people with large amounts of cash as terrorists, and now we have evidence that they're presuming these people to be bad guys based on the fact that they have a large amount of cash. They don't necessarily treat them as a terrorist, they treat them as some punk in an alleyway, take their money and send them on their way. You know, they laid their groundwork with their wording of their words and their brochures and calling it this and that, but really it's as like they're forfeiting assets.
Yeah, man. And you know, this is an extension of the drug war. You know, we're talking about the DEA. Yeah,
we're talking about
the DEA going and just jacking people for their money. But it plays into this much greater, grander scale of things, you know, because HSBC, the huge bank out of London that got caught laundering money for the drug cartels, and they get slapped with
the drug cartels. They were literally funding money to terrorists.
Hell yeah, that too.
They didn't get slapped on the wrist. They got a bracelet.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. Nothing.
And they got a little fine, and you know, but then
HSBC
is
still running London. Don't
you
think
got
they
these
aren't.
These people that are trying to just go across state lines with a couple $1,000, and they're just stealing your money right there, man. And it's $3.9 billion. That's a lot of money, dude. That is an extreme amount of money. And I mean, I don't know how much to emphasize how wrong this is, but it's just completely.
I've never even heard of this. This is, honestly,
Yeah, civil asset forfeiture is a huge problem, man. And they just, it's like highway robbery. They do it to everybody.
Like
all
it
over
really the is. Like, I mean, there's a certain aspect of the Wild West involved. Is that somebody boards a train? Like somebody's.
What possible service to community, to society is this?
Well, okay, in their mind, this is how they would sell it. I'm going to play devil's advocate here, okay?
I'm going to be devil's advocate.
This guy, he's going to take this cash. He's going to take this money. He's going to go buy drugs. Okay? And those guys are going to get on the street. They're going to hurt your kids. They're going to ruin your children.
How are they presuming that he's going to use them for drugs?
Because they're idiots.
Right, but
like I can't even devil's advocate that one.
That's not a logical argument.
But I can just say that's what they'll say.
Yeah, no, that's what they're thinking, but there's no logical reason to be deducing that besides straight profiling. There's got to be an element of racial profiling going on.
I don't know.
Definitely. This is an African American kid, too. This 22 year old kid is African American kid. The guy that was on my plane, also an African American gentleman. Racial profiling is playing into this as well.
Possibly.
But I've also seen several videos online of white guys getting jacked by these guys, too. I mean, they're just jacking everybody, you know, and it's just completely off the rockers. And we have a caller from 606.
Keep it up. I'm going to say I'm pro-American anytime I go. It's good to work, but
Sorry, I couldn't understand what that guy was saying, so he had to drop the call.
Yeah, fair enough. That was a bit muddled. It sounds like he got messed up at the airport and lost $16,000. I don't blame him for being upset.
Hopefully he's not a victim of the drug war.
Yeah, I hope not.
That would suck.
I think you found some bath salts.
You know, and while we're on this whole police state thing, because the drug war thing is completely police state, but here's something that we don't want to forget about. May 13th, 1985, this is 30 years ago, it's called the MOVE bombing, and basically there was this group called MOVE, M-O-V-E, in Philly, and it was like a radical black liberation group, and they were living in this neighborhood, and because they were armed people, and they were, they were very defiant, they were doing their thing, they were very radical activists. The Philadelphia Police Department tried to force them out of these houses. And after being unable to force them out, what happened was the Philadelphia Police Department bombed them.
So wait, you're telling me that a police department in the United States of America was involved in domestic terrorism? Like that happened?
Yes. And here's what's horrible. Five children, six adults dead. 65 houses burned down, 250 people left homeless after this bombing. And if you look at we have a meme posted on the anti-media, you go through our photos, or you can go on the site and check out the article on it about the bombing in Philly. And these images are just, it looks like Palestine. It really does. It just looks like completely devastated. And it was like a firebombing, and they dropped these bombs. There's video. They dropped these bombs out of these helicopters, and because they couldn't evict this group. They were living in these houses, and they couldn't evict them because they were armed. And so instead of doing whatever that they should have done, they just bombed them out and killed a bunch of people.
And and that's kind of something that people miss, and they prepare. And we look at this instance where 30 years ago in 1985, there was a resistant force to the government. They realized that they weren't going to be able to approach them with conventional means, so they just basically firebombed them out. Somebody that's been on the show a few times, one of my best friends, Kelvin Jones, who was in Iraq three times, he explained to me from his extent in Iraq, he said, "Let me explain something to you." He goes, "Good. You got the Second Amendment. Everybody's got the Second Amendment. They can have their guns." He goes, "Guess what? It means nothing. Neat. You've all got guns. Do you understand what the government has and what they can do? You can basically what they did in 85. You can have your weapons and board yourself up. The capabilities they have, you are no match for what they can and will do if you force them to do it."
This is what we have to start to recognize, man, because I think you make a good point here. Boarding yourself up in a house, you can have all the AK-47s and M-16s that you want.
Look at Waco.
Yeah, and a drone flies over top of you, drops a Hellfire missile on
you. They literally drove a tank through that building.
And that's why this kind of resistance – now, is it legitimate? Yes, but it's the kind – and just like you said, like Waco.
Here's what's important. We're not talking in hypotheticals here. We're talking in situations that have happened inside of this country.
Exactly.
It's happened.
Exactly. And that's why that type of, you can't sit there and try to board yourself into your house and say fuck and try to, resist the entire force of the National Guard and the military and the cops.
They will destroy you.
Yeah. And that's why the resistance shouldn't be that way.
No, that's a form of pathology. That's more a reflection. Some of these people are well informed, but this is a form of pathology of emotional disorders more than it is an actual. It's just insane to think that that's any kind of legitimate reaction to a threat. What is this, the zombie apocalypse? You're bored up in your house with your guns? Come on.
But.
We need you out there talking with people and creating a community.
I don't know if you agree with this, Jake. And you, Nick, we've talked about this a lot. And we know this is, where I come from. It's like, I'm willing to lay down any weapon. I don't care. I'm going to come with love at people. Like, period. Like, that's what it's about to me.
is coming at somebody with love.
Guns of love.
Like for real. Like, I know it sounds like cheesy and hokey, but like if you approach somebody, lay down your arms, live by the sword, die by the sword. Come at people with love.
What about all guns are just mini darts with drugs that make you feel good? That'd be a cool war.
Yeah, man. Well, I don't know, man. I think there's a place for everything. When you're faced with an overwhelming amount of violence, retaliation is a natural aspect.
It's human nature.
And it's human nature. It's fight or flight, man. You either run into the woods and you hole up, or you fight back.
But where's that gotten society? Where's that gotten civilization?
Well, and that's the thing, man. And the problem is that humans act that way regardless of what is going to, regardless of what happens, no matter how much education and all that stuff, humans are always going to have a fight or flight instinct. It's built into us.
Well, I tell you what, I've been reading the Revolution book by Russell Brand, whatever your thoughts on him, it doesn't matter. But he makes a suggestion in that book. He's like, you know what, let's just for one voting period, let's all just base everything we do on love, okay, period. And he's like, okay, if that doesn't work, if things don't work out after we do that, then everybody can go back to killing each other, okay? We can do that. Let's just go back to blowing each other's brains out. But let's at least have a time period on this earth where we stop the violence and approach each other with civil means of respect and love.
You know, violence isn't going to go away, but organized reaction to systemic injustice can and will benefit from education. Right now we have an epidemic of failed educational systems going on in the country. And I have the son of two professors, my parents, who I respect very much. The education, I actually do think, is the answer. And I do think that education applied, you get the 99% out in the streets, there's no obfuscation, there's no distortion, there's no propaganda, that there's no camera filters that can erase 99% of the population standing out in the street. So you get them thinking where they need to be thinking, and you get them out in the street, what are they going to do? The 1%, what are they going to do? Can't kill everyone,
dude. If we even had 30%, the game would be over.
It's all about education.
But right now, what are we reaching to people, man? We're getting, I don't know, 5 million people, 20 million people, 30 million people.
We reached 25 million people last week on Facebook,
and that's almost 10%.
And that's part of education.
That is the education, because I'm going to tell you something. Yeah. I don't know your background as much as I do me and Nick's, but I can tell you right now, the education system in this country has failed to such a level that
absolutely.
I don't have a college degree, and I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
You misinterpreted. Education did not have a trademark next to it or a copyright.
But there's people that hold that badge up.
And that's not me, man. That's not me. I'm not talking about education can come from anywhere. But the education comes from the information and the truth and the truthful information being out there.
But people believe because they have a degree that makes them automatically smart.
No, some of these people are the problem.
Most of them are the problem because you know what? They've clearly proven themselves that they bought into the system. Absolutely. Enough that they went through the entire process to congratulate themselves and pat themselves on the back that they have a sheet of paper that says they're smart.
No, the economic professors, they still hold up the GDP, and they only refer to wealth in terms of their little GDP, and they're not taking into account true cost economics. No, the education system has failed. That's part of what I was talking about with a failed education system. But, like with other things, that can be reformed. But the education comes from wherever you can find it. The truth is out there. Wherever you can glean the truth from, you consolidate that into a funnel, And that's the education.
You could get educated just walking down the street, running
Absolutely.
Some random
You literally
person.
Can.
Absolutely. That's happened to me plenty of times. But yeah, you know, the thing is about the whole education topic is that in its current form, overall, the education system is dictated by the government, which, you know, is likely to most likely not want to have people questioning, you know, what's going on.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, there's a lot of professors and stuff and a lot of teachers. And we've gotten emails from several students in college that are like, hey, our professor, you know, is encouraging us to read the anti-media and
there
stuff.
You go.
You know, because you can't control. Yeah, the education system, quote unquote, as a whole is completely run. You know, it's run amok. It's gone to shit. But there's individuals in there, teachers, professors,
that's everything.
All that stuff.
That's everything. Everybody wants to blame this entire system on this one thing, and everybody forgets. Okay, let's sit here and talk about black people. They say, well, all white people done this. No, they haven't. Certain individuals have done some horrible, horrible, evil things. People that are feminists, some men have done some horrible things. Does that mean all men? No. It's the same with the education system. Some people have done some horrible things to mislead people. And everybody wants to get away from, and that's where it does go back to personal responsibility. Because everybody wants to blame it on this entire structure of this. No, it's people. It's your individual person that, and everybody just wants to blame it on this or that.
There's a systemic academic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it goes down. It also, like, the individuals are influenced by the system that they're a part of. You know what I mean?
But people have to.
And so it goes back to that whole, like, the nail that stands up, you know, gets hammered down type of theory, where it's like you do have good teachers. And I remember whenever we'd have, like, first year teachers, you know, back in high school, we'd have a teacher and it's like, oh, this is my first year teaching high school and shit. Man, that teacher would be like all about it, you know, taking care of the students, doing everything they can for, you know, as much as they can. And then by, you know, years later, it's like the nail that stands up gets hammered in by the system, man. And like anybody that runs amok, anybody that causes a little controversy within the system, whether it's the teaching system or the political system, anything, eventually that nail just keeps getting hammered by every angle. You know what I mean?
And here's the thing. It's not even controversy, Nick. It's question. If you question, you're not even saying you know. You just question because you're curious. They hammer you down.
Well, and look at where, okay, schools need money. Even private schools are not getting nearly as many donations and endowments as they used to. They need research. They need money. They get it from research. Where does that research money come from? Military operations.
Grants.
Corporate interests.
Corporate grants.
UAV, that's all right.
And there you get, you know, with that comes propaganda for the corporatocracy, and then with absolute
total control, too.
Total control, you know. We're not saying it's all schools or all teachers. The teachers are victims themselves, unfortunately.
It's probably all public universities. They're so beholden to government, you know?
Right. Well, the public ones are beholden to the government. The private ones are beholden to the corporations.
And the donors, yeah.
And the donors. And between the two of them, yeah, we're not getting, a people's history. We're not getting a true people's education.
What's funny, though, is y'all just you summed it up. Everybody's beholden to money.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Whether it's from the government or whether it's from a donor.
And that's capitalism. And that's why we cannot. This is
That's bribes. That's bribes. That's not necessarily. I'm not.
This is where late capitalism leads. We see it. This is the manifestation of corporatism, corporatocracy, and late capitalism.
I don't believe there's any system, whether it's socialism, communism, capitalism, that you can say is inherently bad. It's the people get involved, and they're so corrupt that they distort things for their own personal gain. And I think it's foolish of us to sit here and blame a system when there's corrupt people, and we want to say, well, the system caused it. No, it's the people that caused it. And we have to hold the people accountable instead of the system.
Accountability, Nick has been talking about that a lot. You're absolutely right. Accountability is huge, but I think you have to, at the very least, acknowledge a synarchy, a global synarchy that is
agreed.
Controlling things from the top.
And acknowledge an arch villain. That's the Federal Reserve that creates so much money out of thin air that we have a 4%, you know, increase in everything year to year, no matter what. That inflation is permanent as long as we're under the system, and they're the global reserve currency. So the whole entire global system's out of whack.
Well, it's what Ron Paul said. Inflation's the invisible tax, and it's the highest tax that we pay, and nobody sees it coming.
Right. Well,
so we got this next topic, and it kind of blends in here with what we kind of wandered off into. But there was big news today that Obama's TPP has been blocked by the Senate and this, that, and the other. But I got this article here. According to Politico, that whole trade war thing only lasted a day because now they've made concessions by the Republicans to the Democrats where they're going to get to vote on these two other trade deals that they want. And now they've agreed to...
They served the unions up on a platter, man. I guarantee it. And Obama's going to just say, oh, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, the Democrats have basically agreed... to do the fast track, but we're gonna have to see where this vote goes tomorrow because there's a lot of people that are kind of mad.
And this fast track, to be clear, the fast track means that this is, you know, eliminating any kind of like transparent assessment of this before it's passed.
It's more on the EU, like it really affects Europe a lot, even though we are involved in it.
Well, what
it
does,
a trade agreement.
Yeah, the biggest.
They're going to call in their debt too, Europe, and I believe it's already been something like $70 billion a month. They've been bailing us out since 2008. So imagine what that's at now with interest.
You know, the thing to me is that this whole fast track thing, the TPP, like, you know, if there's going to be trade deals, okay, yeah, like governments and states, they have to go into trade deals agreements in order to, you know, set a basic, you know, foundation for how they're going to trade with certain countries or certain blocks or certain groups, whatever. But here's the thing, man. This whole fast track thing, it basically delegates the authority that's supposed to be over the Congress. And, you know, the Congress is supposedly a reflection of the people. And we all know that's not true. Congress has like between a 9% and 20% approval rating, depending on who you ask. But at the same time, these guys are delegating their responsibility, which is to represent their localities, over to the executive branch. And this is why this whole trade deal thing makes such little sense. If you look at it at face value, you say, okay, the Republicans always say that they're for states' rights and they're for, you know, representation, and they're against Obama's. You know, they say Obama has too much power and that he's always doing too much. But so why is it that the Republicans are the ones pushing this fast track TPP bill, which is exactly what it does? It gives all of the authority to negotiate trade over to the president.
It's
and
politics.
According to the Constitution, negotiating of trade and stuff like that, that's a responsibility of the Congress. So you know, what's going on here is something that goes completely against anything that the Republicans supposedly say they're for, and we all know that.
Well, it's
they're
politics.
Full of shit.
It's politics.
So yeah, this totally is. It makes it so full of shit. And then, you know, the Democrats are supposedly against it because it's going to be bad for the middle class. It's gonna outsource a bunch of jobs.
They want to absolve themselves. Okay, this is what they want to do. The Republicans are really the people in Congress altogether want to absolve themselves from when a horrible decision is made. They don't want to be involved in that, and they want to say we didn't vote for that. We didn't have anything to do with that. You can continue to give us money and you know, they can support it on the back end, but at the same time, their name's not next to a vote. And their name may be next to this vote.
So then in the end, it just falls on Obama.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so that's what these guys, you know, that could be why they're doing this. But, you know, the Democrats for the longest have been coming out against it. We all know Elizabeth Warren and all the criticism. You got Bernie Sanders criticizing it.
Rand Paul criticized it. He's the only Republican.
Yeah. And the thing is that it looks like this thing is going to be sent to Obama. And he is going to be able to negotiate this thing. And it is a dangerous trade agreement because it not only does it pass the Congress is passing the buck off to Obama, but now Obama, once he signs it, it passes the buck off to a corporate tribunal. And that's when you start dealing in some very gray, you start dealing in a very gray area where you don't really know, like, okay, well, how are we, how is this, all this stuff going to be enforced? Because now all of the, any trade dispute isn't going to be handled by any government or any elected democratic authority. It's going to be done, it's going to be delegated to this corporate tribunal, which is going to be a court that's going to be made up of lobbyists from corporations.
And dear Republicans, by the way, this started with Richard Nixon.
We're in Blade Runner. That's it. It's done. We're in Blade
Runner. It's a perfect analogy. Because really what it did was it's just going to the lowest common denominator for any, you know, non-education job. So you can imagine the lower, you know, it's just going to screw everything
basically
up.
Basically, what this is about is exploiting labor and exploiting resources from poor countries. And that's basically what's going to happen. So what I see the TPP as is they're saying, okay, China may or may not be a threat in the near future. So let's shift our manufacturing to countries in Latin America and countries in the Pacific Rim. And let's do that instead of dealing with China. But the only problem is that we're going to have to start exploiting mad labor in Latin America and all these other countries. So they need this TPP as an insulation from all this legal action that they may or may not face when all this stuff starts being implemented. But they do need it because they can't trust China to be our main source of cheap labor anymore. And that's what this whole TPP thing is about. China became too powerful so that we can't depend on them for cheap labor anymore.
But listen, like I just said, this all goes back to Nixon because that started like China and Nixon and yada yada yada. That's all this is going to turn into. They're going to.
It's NAFTA on steroids.
Yes.
I mean, and I don't think we fully understand all the repercussions of TPP. DB, I know you're pretty well read on this issue, and you get me scared, man.
It'll necessitate a currency reset with every major economic bloc. And this is what they want. This is the NAFTA thing. This is the degradation of the Mexican government basically being ripe to be annexed. I'm not kidding you that NAFTA is one of the goals. And they want a Latin invasion, so to speak, so they can just make a gigantic economic bloc. Because they have to compete with China. People don't understand. China's a behemoth. And when they get the green light from the powers that be to start taking land around them, they're going to be another manufactured threat for us.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
So we do have a caller on the line from area code 205. Do you want to chime in on this conversation?
Well, hey, I've been listening for like the last – I actually called in for another subject. I've been listening for like the last 10 or 15 minutes. There's a lot of stuff y'all talking about, man, I didn't even know about. It's pretty interesting. But like a lot of the stuff y'all talking about I can relate to because like it's like with NAFTA. It's like I see a lot of that. I see a lot of that, them trade deals and stuff like that, and it, I don't know, man. It makes me sick what it does to indigenous communities, particularly in like Mexico and South America. I mean, we saw what NAFTA did in the early 90s. What happened in southern Mexico? I mean, I don't know much about a lot of the trade stuff, man. I don't know much about that stuff, man.
Well, hey, it's cool you're trying to learn, you know?
Yeah, and the trade stuff is so hard to follow because at face value, it's such a boring topic, you know. But the unfortunate part, like as you mentioned, and how NAFTA decimated Mexico. And, you know, there's a story that right now is a current event that's going on. San Quentin, we actually talked about it. It's a prison here in California, but it's also a city in Mexico where these farm workers have gone on strike because – These guys are making like $1 an hour. They're getting paid like $7 a day and things like that to grow a lot of the food that's shipped out up here to the U.S. And they went on strike. And the whole reason and part of the reason why they're getting away with treating these workers so badly is because of NAFTA. And because of what NAFTA did, and so they're able to get away with that kind of stuff.
I actually called in on SM show a few weeks ago. I actually keep a very close eye on what's going on in Mexico, man. I mean, there's a lot of big things. I mean, I don't mean to get in the middle of y'all show and try to like change topics or subjects or anything, but there is a lot of major things going on
particularly in Mexico this year, particularly with trade deals. I haven't heard a lot about it from, not even from a lot of alternative media sources, but you know, Mexico.
Hey, Chase, is this Chase?
Yeah.
Okay, you and Manny were talking about this. Go ahead and tell everybody what's like the military and what's going on in Mexico right now before we head out.
I heard the Chinese were there.
Okay, well, I've been wanting to actually come on the show for a while and actually talk about this, but a lot of people don't realize. But the Mexican petroleum industry, the oil industry in Mexico, it's been socialized. It's been a state-owned enterprise for the last 75 years. And
wait, but that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine as long as that state is cool with the U.S. Because, you know, when Iran tried to do that, we went and overthrew their government.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't realize why Felipe Calderon started the drug war in 2006, and you don't hear about it a lot. But the reason why Felipe Calderon started the drug war in Mexico in 2006, because what happened is for a while there, the Mexican government wanted to open up the oil reserves in Mexico to foreign companies, particularly to American companies. We all know about that. But he started the drug war because he wanted to eradicate all these criminal groups and all these cartels from these oil-rich areas so he can get more bids on his oil contracts, on Mexican oil contracts. He wanted to bring in these companies to develop these areas. Well, this year in Mexico, this is going to be the first time in 70-something years that they are going to open up the reserves to these international companies to come in and bid on. Well, the cartels, in 2014, the cartels stole like seven million barrels of oil from Pemex. It's worth over $1 billion. And I have some theories. I have theories of the reason why, like with Jade Helm and all that stuff, the reason why America particularly is getting interested in Mexico because of all that's going down. Like, there's some major things this year going on in Mexico that people are not paying attention to. You know, I mean, hell, they shot down a military aircraft. The Jalisco the New Generation Cartel shot down a military aircraft like 2 weeks ago in Mexico, and you like hear nothing about it.
We love them.
From the American media. I mean, it's a lot of major things. Yeah, there's a lot of major things going on down there. And you know what happens when American companies get involved and there's oil involved. I mean, that's the drug of politicians is oil. I mean, that's a drug that they sling, man.
And drugs and gold.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and so this kind of, you know, this kind of goes in, this kind of validates what DB was saying, man, is that, you know, we might start seeing more military action in Mexico. There already is covert stealth military action going on in Mexico. I think at least they've admitted to at least 1,000 military personnel.
Oh, yeah, they have already admitted to it.
And they've sent billions of dollars in aid down there. Much of it has been military.
Okay, Nick, you being so close to the border, do you not really believe that the United States government is controlling what the Mexican government does? And the really only apprehension that even comes is from the cartels?
Well, dude, anyone familiar with the Monroe Doctrine knows that the Mexican government has to be under U.S. Sphere of influence at the least, because if not, they would have already been overthrown several times.
Exactly, Nick. I believe what we're seeing is pre-annexation. They're going to use Russian or Chinese or both incursion to try to, you know, repay them for Ukraine, and then guess what? Land grab all the way down to Mexico City.
Yeah, there was a story out of these Chechnyan, the governor of Chechnya was basically saying that he would fund rebels to take for Mexican rebels to take back former territories of the U.S. Of Mexico, which is now, you know, California, Arizona, and stuff. I mean, this is really happening. I mean, this is crazy.
It's going on. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'll be here tomorrow night. S.M. Gibson, Nick Burnaby. Jake Roberts.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.